Hey, Almighty Ballin listeners, specifically Unguarded Shooting listeners, I'm back with my boy, Michael Luxemburg.
Ooh!
And that enthusiasm is incredibly genuine. It is not late. It is not like we just stayed up watching the Atlanta Hawks and the Warriors. We're totally fine. I don't think we're tired.
We're fresh as spring daisies.
Yeah. And say we weren't, then that just shows our dedication to our craft.
That's just courage.
Yeah. Like the courage to take the iPhone jack or to take the audio jack out of the iPhone.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Courageous innovation. That's what we're about.
Enough with the jokes. Let's get on to the basketball. So tonight we're going to talk about, one less team than we would normally talk about. Normally we do three or four. Today we're doing two because we're going to get in-depth on each of the teams, starting with Kings Wizards. All right. You want to go ahead and touch on something you saw?
Sure.
First off, let me actually say the score. 101 to 95, the Wizards eked it out. Like, by the skin of their nails. Didn't even deserve to do that.
They won the same way that, the one person who makes it out of a house fire, without permanent bodily harm, won the house fire. This game was a garbage pile.
Nothing says war of attrition like the Sacramento Kings averaging 40%, 40.9% from the field, 14.3% from three-point line.
Oh my God, they couldn't hit. If they were hitting even moderately decent on their threes, this game would not have been close.
Oh yeah, and if Boogie hit any of his free throws, he was 3 for 10, so yeah. He did hit three. But, I mean, he had those two crucial ones late that he
bricked up.
Yeah, and I guess Washington got two chicken sandwiches, Washington fans.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a thing.
Well, I think
yeah.
They get chicken sandwiches whenever an opposing player misses both their free throws. I think Boogie did it twice.
Yeah. You know what? That could be a good scam. You could have an NBA team and bring it there and, just put out guys who just miss all their free throws and collect all of the chicken sandwich things.
Put Chick-fil-A out of business.
Yeah. Or... Anyways. So... I think Bradley Beal was the hero in this one. It certainly wasn't John Wall.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, John Wall really wanted to be, but it definitely was Bradley Beal. It's not even like he hit tough shots. He just got himself into really good spots for threes and just drained him when he was open.
Yeah, and there was this thing. Okay, so he hit a career-high 7 three-pointers, and he had 6 at the end of regulation. But he started heating up late, right? The Wizards were 78-76. They were behind by 2, 9 minutes left. Beal comes back on the floor, knocks down a three-pointer pretty much right away. And then Trey Burke misses a layup. Ball bounces to Beal, who's in the left arc, who's, behind the left corner. And he nails another three, which is his 6th of the game. It basically gets them so that they should have won, right?
Trey Burke also made his 2nd interior shot of the season.
And that was wonderful. But basically, yeah. from the point that Beal heated up to overtime, John Wall just had no interest whatsoever in giving Beal the ball back.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, the only times he did was when it was clearly an assist or a very obvious pass. But he had no interest in sort of force-feeding the hot hand or any of that stuff.
Well, no, I think he just, wouldn't... I mean, he took so many really bad shots.
He took some dumb... Well, see, I think his interest was less in denying Beal than, making sure people remember, John Wall and Bradley Beal helped him win this game. But, by doing that, John Wall almost made them lose this game.
Yeah. No, and I think it was salt, honestly.
Yeah, at least partially, yeah.
Yeah. John, do you get the feeling, and of course, I don't hang out with Bradley Beal or John Wall.
I once met John Wall at a fish store.
Yeah, fish. But I think I would like Bradley Beal a lot more.
John Wall was really nice at the fish store. But yeah, Bradley Beal seems a little bit more of a chill dude. John Wall seems much more intense.
Yeah, Beal just is, he always to the media is just nice and says that so much of his success was because of John Wall, and John Wall just berates him. I guess maybe it's one of those things where it's easy to be the nice guy when you're making twice as much as the mean guy.
Right. Well, it's easy to say it's right. Right. It's easy for, I mean, you can understand where John Wall's coming from, right? Like, he hasn't been hurt that often, has had to play with these garbage Wizards teams for years, has put up great numbers, has carried them to like playoff wins, and been like an incredible player for them. And Bradley Beal's been on and off the court, hasn't really had a full season of being excellent, and is making so much more money and is so much more sort of like, no one sort of nitpicks Bradley Beal's game the way they nitpick John Wall's game, because he still feels like this like fresh, angelic, special boy. But like, I mean, I can understand why that grates on John Wall.
Okay, well, so here's my thing though, right? Bradley Beal's game is better than John Wall. If you could tell me that both of those players would be injured, wouldn't be injured rather, if they would play 82 games every year until they were like 36, right? I would take Bradley Beal.
I think that depends. I think the thing is that Bradley Beal on a team with a guy like John Wall who can get him the ball becomes infinitely more valuable.
Well,
right? But if you stick them both on a bad team, like, remember those old Pelicans teams? Like, Eric Gordon was the best player on those teams?
Yeah.
Like, in that situation, I think Bradley Beal would be notably worse than John Wall.
Well, I don't even know if that's true.
I mean, I think you even saw it tonight. Like, he was really great coming, and we've seen it all the time. Like, he's really good coming off screens. He's really great pulling up, but, like, his ability to generate his own shots kind of comes and goes.
Well, no, I mean, I think he can consistently generate his own shots. I don't think he generates offense for anyone else, but that may just be a symptom of his situation. Like, he doesn't want to step on John Wall's toes. But, I mean, we can only speculate.
And, right, I mean, that's
and
the thing.
It's kind of silly to say something like that, like, oh, I would rather have this player than the other, because, yeah, it's situational, you know. I mean, it would depend. But I understand why Bradley Beal got the contract he did, because if those injury concerns weren't there, then he's spectacular. He's 23.
Well, right, and it's also true that, like, if John Wall were getting up his contract extension were at the time Bradley Beal's contract, like, if John Wall had gotten his extension under the new cap, he probably would have gotten the same money Bradley Beal did.
Well, yeah, John Wall got a max, and Bradley Beal got a max.
Right. It's just that the cap difference is so substantial, and so I can see why, like, John Wall sort of like, just because this dude,
the pillows hitting the cord there, yeah.
Just because this dude showed up at the right time, he's getting paid like $40 million more than me, even though I've put in like so much more sweat equity to this garbage pile of a team. I don't know. I feel like that would chafe at me.
Yeah, but would you resent? I mean, it's not Bradley Beal's fault.
No, I mean, I'd be more mad at ownership for sure. But I definitely could see how, like, that could trickle down and like, you know, damage his relationship with Bradley Beal. Like, that's not...
Yeah, yeah.
That's not really surprising or, like, hard to understand.
Like I said, you know, we don't know how Bradley Beal would react if he was, you know, on the losing end of this equation, right? Like,
right.
It seems like he's a cool guy because he's making tons of money. Maybe he wouldn't be such a cool guy. Anyways, we should return to the game. Bradley Beal, 31 points. Like I said, career high, 7 3-pointers. You know, he pretty much brought them back up late and, then, you know, helped his team finish it in overtime where, you know, pretty much for about, it was 3 minutes into the fourth quarter, right? And that's when Bradley Beal came back in. I don't remember who he replaced in the rotation, but up until that point, it's just like no one could hit a shot. It was like a total slugfest from then until the end of the game. And, I mean, you could see it with, like, DeMarcus Cousins. Like, he wasn't hitting his shots. He was getting to the free throw line and then missing all of them.
I mean, he was dominant on the floor.
It was
though.
Just ugly.
Yeah. I mean, it was an ugly, ugly game. DeMarcus was kind of dominant outside the free throw line. Like, the Wizards just could not stop him from getting his.
Yeah. 36 points on 16 of 34 shooting.
Yeah.
20 rebounds. So that's good.
Yeah, he controlled that game. I really think that the sort of low-key sort of secret to this game actually was the Wizards have these sort of role players, the Otto Porters, Markieff Morris's, Kelly Oubre's, who this season have sort of been pretty hit or miss. Porter maybe less so than the others. He's been pretty consistently good.
Oh, hey, I have a theory about that. Remind me to bring it up.
Okay. But tonight they were all of them played sort of their B plus A minus game,
except for Markieff Morris, who was 0 for 10 until overtime, where he hit both of his shots.
And he did a bunch of little things very well, which we were talking about before, how Markieff Morris traditionally does not do little things very well.
Yeah, no, it's like as soon as it was overtime, Markieff Morris, it's like he was a totally different player.
Yeah, I mean, he did have one very Markieff Morris moment where cut across the key, and he just sort of stood there and watched him go by, and then realized he wasn't defending him and, like, jogged out to the three-point line. But Ty Lawson was too busy pounding the ball into the ground to, like, notice the wide-open dude at the three-point line. But, we just saw, like, Oubre had 10 rebounds. Morris had a pretty spectacular sort of rebound tap-out to Beal for, like, the game-sealing three-pointer at the end.
Yeah. That was pretty cool.
Porter had a crazy rebound with three Kings dudes around him, and then was able to get it out of the corner, even though he was trapped on all sides, and get it to Markieff to reset the offense.
Okay, so I want to bring up my Otto Porter theory, okay?
Sure, go for it.
All right, so I think that maybe the reason why... So he was drafted the third pick in 2013.
Yeah.
And so everyone who's drafted in the 2013 draft just got their extensions. You know, Giannis and Steven Adams. Like, he was eligible for extension until... like the 15th of October or something like that. So maybe the reason why he didn't get that extension is because he was asking for more money than John Wall makes, and the Wizard management just knew that that would not be good.
Yeah. I mean, it could very well be. And, I mean, I don't know. I mean, like, we talked about this with Vicini ages ago, but I really think that the sort of Porter resurgence, or I mean, I guess not even a resurgence, just like a regular surgence, is largely due in part to like the intense pressure of being a third overall pick and him not living up to those expectations, and then dealing with sort of the psychological damage of like being perceived as a potential bust. And now he's sort of grown into himself, and he's becoming like a pretty solid player. But I do think that it's not out of, I don't think it's unreasonable for the Wizards to sort of be like, give us a whole season of you being this guy, right? Like,
yeah.
If they're getting that extension, they're paying for the player he's been this year, which he's been for like 18 games and then smatterings across his other seasons.
Yeah.
Right? And so I think it's not unreasonable for them to say, look, give us a season to show that you're this dude and you'll get your money.
Yeah.
But we're not giving you this, we're not paying you off of 30 games sample when there's so many other games that indicate that, like, you're not this dude.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I was not very high on Otto Porter for, in fact, I was very anti Otto Porter for a while there, but I've just really liked what I've seen. He just flipped the switch at some point, but moving right along. So in the first half, Burke, Satoransky, Smith, and Nicholson together combined for more fouls than points, and that's 4 out of 5 players coming off the bench for the Wizards. So if you haven't heard the news, the Wizards bench is terrible. If you haven't spoken to Marcin Gortat, who made it clear to everyone that he thinks that the bench is terrible, and he's right, you know, I'm not sure if you should say that to the media, but anyways, whatever. Not only was the bench really awful, right? They got into foul trouble, and they got into such profound foul trouble that Boogie, you remember that stretch where Boogie was just getting really hot, taking it at Smith. Yeah,
at Smith and Gortat.
At Smith over and over, right?
Yeah.
Well, no, it was during the bench minutes, right?
Yeah. Well, he had a couple stretches like that.
Well,
yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. So Boogie had this moment, right, where he was like, "Wait a minute, Nicholson and Smith, the power forward and center for the bench unit, both have 3 fouls, and it's not halftime yet. I'm just going to take it at them over and over and over." And they didn't want to foul out, and they couldn't really foul out because Jan Mahimi isn't playing right now. More on that later. So they just weren't playing defense on Boogie, which is a recipe for disaster.
Yeah, I mean, he bossed them around. He bossed Gortat around in other minutes. The Wizards legit had 0 answer. And that was almost enough to win Sacramento the game. Like, Sacramento had 2 other players in double figures.
Yeah. And that's something that Jaeger has talked about not being super stoked about. He use the phrase he wants to diversify the offense in regards to being asked about how he felt about Rudy Gay and DeMarcus Cousins carrying so much of the scoring load. That doesn't make him happy. So over the last five games, he's actually had five different starting lineups, right? And he's just trying different stuff. I mean, I think that's maybe what I would do if I was the coach of the Sacramento Kings, just to figure out like what I could do.
Yeah, and I mean, like, it's sort of hack at this point to be like trading Rudy Gay will make your team better, but I do feel like trading Rudy Gay would make this team better.
Oh yeah.
Just because like he wants to get the ball against smaller wings and post up down low. DeMarcus wants to get the ball and crash into the lane. Like, they take up a lot of the same space when Rudy Gay is playing his game. And they're both kind of ball-dominant dudes. And in a way that doesn't really complement the other.
Yeah, no, you have a starting lineup. Well, I mean, he's been switching between starting lineups. But your hypothetical, your should-be starting lineup or whatever, the starting lineup that would automatically be chosen if you were playing NBA 2K is Darren Collison, who is best offensively when he's creating for himself, right? Who's that guy?
Aaron Aflalo?
Yeah, Aaron Aflalo, who is best offensively when he's creating his own offense. Rudy Gay, who is best offensively when he's creating his own offense. And, I don't know, someone, Matt Barnes maybe? I don't know.
Yeah,
Omri Cassidy, except it doesn't seem like Jaeger likes to play Omri Cassidy, but, and then Boogie, who is best when the ball is in his hand and he's creating his own offense. So yeah, I mean, I understand that. And that's also part of why I understand Jaeger being so willing to switch up the starting lineup. Cause it's like, you have no ball creation outside of Ty Lawson, who's been excellent over the last few games. I'll admit. And he was good tonight. He was one of those three players who was in double digits. He had a total throwback Ty Lawson layup. That was maybe outside of the Paul Millsap offensive rebound, like late. We're going to talk about the Warriors and Hawks, which was the game that we watched after that. Those are the two plays in the night.
There were a couple.
Oh, maybe the Draymond back-to-back blocks.
And also that Boogie behind-the-back crossover drive and dunk.
Yeah.
There were a couple really good plays tonight amidst 48 minutes of garbage basketball, or 53 minutes of garbage basketball, and 48 minututes of very good basketball.
Yeah. The other game. Well, I mean, you came in talking about like this really original and creative idea of writing about stranded superstars, and then I told you that I just had a podcast with Ben Golliver who wrote an article about it.
But I did have an original and creative idea about the specifics of the John Wall Bradley Beal situation.
Well, anyways, right?
That's true.
When you have, even if they're super crappy teams, you know, there were times at which the Kings versus the Wizards were fun, and it was almost always because of either Bradley Beal, John Wall, or Boogie. A lot more Beal and Boogie for this game. John Wall, by the way, 11 turnovers. So
yeah, and some of them were exceedingly stupid.
I think that he was just super salty, man.
He was just forcing it in a lot of ways that seemed unnecessary.
You can see him sort of, like, falling apart, like, losing his mental stability when Beal's going off. And Beal just dropped 40 the other night. Like, Beal's having this great stretch of games where he's scoring a lot more than Wall. And Wall's just, like, losing it, man. He's like, what's that movie with, I think it's Beethoven? And the guy...
Oh, Amadeus?
Yeah, yeah. He's
the one,
like,
about Mozart and Salieri.
Yeah, he's like... John Wall's like Salieri, man.
Yeah, he is. Beal's younger, and he hits threes just like Mozart.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's... I don't know. It's a As a Washington native, it's a frustrating situation because intuitively, the way that the two of them play, they should be like a perfect backcourt pairing. Like, John Wall draws so much defense to the penetration, is such good vision, can find Beal, like, can find anyone anywhere on the court from the, like, from the middle of the paint. Beal has this quick release and is incredible at getting open. That combination should be devastating. Instead, it's this miserable slog.
Yeah. I mean, you can only hope that John Wall's wearing purple next season, you know, playing for the Sacramento Kings.
That's what Boogie wants.
Yeah, so for some insight, Candace Buckner, who is excellent at her job.
He's an A-plus reporter.
Just had a really fantastic. I have intro quotes for my normal segments of Almighty Ballin. The intro music just goes straight in for Unguarded Shootings. I know you don't listen to my podcast, but I'm talking to Lux. You clearly listen to my podcast because you're listening to it right now, listener. Anyways, great podcast with Tim Bontemps on posting up with Tim Bontemps because it's the Washington Post posting up. It's great. So Candace Buckner, anyways, she reported that Cousins and Wall, quote unquote, talk constantly, and that Boogie said, quote unquote, it's come up when asked if they ever discussed being teammates in the NBA. Buckner noted Cousins also said, you never know what will happen. It's the NBA, so hopefully one day Wall will be in a Sacramento uniform, which is so troubling in more than it's troubling in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I mean, one of the crazy things about this whole, like, Boogie getting traded, will they trade Boogie or not, will Boogie anywhere or not saga is, like, it seems like Boogie loves Sacramento, like, the city and, like, the place.
Do you think Boogie is, like, into, like, do you think Boogie's into, like, BDSM or something? Is he, like, a masochist?
No, I think that, like, a small town or a small city, by city size, obviously, like, it would be a huge town.
he's just a small town girl
living in a lonely world. Yeah. But is, like, a good environment for that guy. Like, the Sacramento fans, like, are so ride or die for their team, particularly for Boogie.
Well, certain ones.
A lot of them.
I mean, like, but...
And he's, like, he's the biggest star in Sacramento. Like, there is no...
And that's terrible for his psyche, because he's...
Well, it's might be terrible in certain ways, but clearly he enjoys it.
Yeah.
Right? And
which is bad.
Sure, but... Like, I'm not going to render an ethical judgment on how he feels about his town, but, like...
Do you think that Tom Brady would go to a free agency meeting with for Boogie, or only for KD?
I think he'd only do it. I don't think he'd do it for Boogie.
Do you think if he did do it, that Boogie would like that?
I don't feel like Boogie's the kind of dude who wants, like, Tom Brady in the room to be like... He goes, like, oh, we got the best fans. Like, they're going to yell awful stuff at you all the time, but, like, they're really great.
And let me tell you, it's awesome.
Yeah, Boston's a really great city for me.
Anyways, not talking about politics. So there's not really a ton more to say about this game or about the two team situations. You know, stranded superstar. Oh, Kelly Oubre had the first double-double of his career.
That yeah, I actually thought Kelly Oubre played a heck of a game.
10 points, 10 rebounds, so the most marginal double-double possible.
But strong defense, got some loose balls. One of the problems I've had watching Oubre in recent times is that he's not always 100% in terms of the reads and reactions on defense. I thought he was a lot better about that tonight.
I compared him to Rodney Carney.
Which I still don't super buy, but... I think that he showed much clearer flashes, I think, of the player that I think Wizards fans want him to grow into. This sort of, like, hyper-athletic, really good defender, slasher wing. And he showed flashes of that tonight, like, pretty definitively. I mean, obviously, like...
I was following until defensive.
He played good defense, man.
No.
Yeah, he did.
I mean, he might have, but he doesn't play good defense.
That's what I'm saying. He's like, he's has trouble with read and react stuff. He's doing it really well tonight. If he can continue improving on that, then, like, he's going to be that player.
Maybe it was because he was playing against the Sacramento Kings.
That's definitely a possibility.
They, like, didn't make any shots. But, anyways, are you good to move on? You want to talk about this Warriors-Hawks game?
I'm trying to think if there's anything else that was worth talking about in this Kings game.
Oh, you know what's worth talking about, actually? GlassesUSA.com.
Okay, oh, yeah.
So GlassesUSA.com, our newest sponsor, and I'm super stoked to have them sponsoring the show because I spent probably 4 or 5 days ago, maybe an hour and a half, using their, like, simulated glasses trying on simulator. You know, like, synchronize your eyes on the camera, on the web, right? And you take a picture of your face and it tries on glasses for you, right? I picked out like three different pairs that I really like, and they have like a little favorite button, right? And now I have like 20 pairs that I had to go through and decide which one I wanted. And anyways, so Glasses USA, they have tons and tons of selection. They have it organized really well. I was looking for, you know, I'm sort of like a hipster. I tend to go for the hipster frames. Lux has perfect vision.
Yeah. So what do I do at this website? Do they sell sunglasses?
They sell sunglasses, yeah.
Boomba. So even if you have flawless eyes like me, there's a reason to go to glassesusa.com.
And there's fashion frames. I've never had a problem with the idea of wearing glasses, even if you don't have eyesight.
I'll confess to having done that before.
Well, like, the thing is it's like, there's not like a uniform style of glasses, so it's clearly a fashion choice, right?
Sure.
And that's why Glasses USA, by the way, has all the best brands. They have Ray-Ban, Oakley, Michael Kors for men, for women. Anyways, don't take my word for it. Check it out for yourself. Go to glassesusa.com. And here's the thing. At checkout, if you use the promo code ALMIGHTY, that's ALMIGHTY.
Why?
Why? And why do you want to use this? Because you get 55% off your purchase.
55% is so much.
It is. It's actually a lot.
Yeah. It's like you're getting a free lens and free hooky part, and they're tossing in the nose. You're only paying for one lens and one hook. Like, the nose bridge and the other parts are free.
And they have a... They when they send you the glasses, right, they send return, like, postage and stuff with it, right? Because they have, like, a full 100%, like, you know, if you don't like these for whatever reason, just return them. And it's cool. You can get your money back or get store credit. And, like, let's be real, you probably get the money back because that could be store credit if you want to. You know, they have full one-year warranty on all their stuff. And, you know, they take healthcare and everything. So if you're, you know, if you're someone who wants to get their glasses even cheaper than they already are after a 55% discount by using the promo code ALMIGHTY, then you know, just fill it out. And by the way, they have a they basically cut out the middleman for like retail. They cut out the middleman for the labs that cut the lenses. They have their own lens cutters, right? They cut out the shipping middleman. They do all of that, and it's like Glasses USA because they do it all from here, so they don't have to like ship it across the ocean or anything. It's pretty great. GlassesUSA.com. Use the promo code ALMIGHTY. Get 55% off your first purchase and support the podcast.
Yeah, that's such a crazy discount.
55%, right?
55%. That's five higher than Steph Curry's effective field goal percentage with 5 minutes or less remaining and both teams than 5 points. So let's talk about the Warriors.
Oh, we never talked about it. So Yamahimi actually was back... Yamahimi, bench center for the Wizards. He was back last game against the Spurs, but his knee, he was out for 6 weeks, so for the full start of the season, because he had knee surgery, and he came back for one game against the Spurs, but then it was sore and he sat out, which to me is always a really bad look for a team when they have a guy who returns from injury and then after like one or two games he's sitting again.
Oh, super surprised. The super incompetent Wizards have an incompetent training staff. I'm so shocked.
Yeah. So anyways, Hawks, Warriors, how about you, you know, you can be the quarterback, I'll be the center all for right. This one.
I'm just sad that super dope segue didn't really work.
I had to talk about Mahimi. It's too bad we didn't talk about the impact that he could have on the bench, but
We'll see when we'll watch again once he's back, and we'll see if that's
I don't want to ever watch a Wizards game ever again.
Well, I'm sorry, we're going to have to. let's talk about the Hawks-Warriors game. This was a very well-played 48 minutes of basketball, all in all.
Really fun.
Really, really fun. There are a couple of big takeaways, I think, from this game. The first being that the Hawks' defense is so good and so smart.
Yes.
And not just smart in terms of tactics, but smart in terms of like on the floor reads by the defenders. Like they were playing, like you'd imagine playing the Warriors, you'd be pressuring the 3-point line in a very intense way. And that's not really what the Hawks did for long stretches. They kind of fell back and packed the paint a little bit, but they were closing out on a dime every time, real hard. Straight closeouts that were able to force passes and force the ball away, and then they just fall right back. And it clearly messed with the Warriors' mojo for three quarters and change. Like, they were really struggling to figure out what to do with this defense. Between that and Atlanta just really slowing the ball down and forcing them to play in the half court, like, gave the Warriors some real trouble. The other takeaway to that being, no matter how much trouble you give the Warriors, they have a ridiculous amount of talent that can help them pull out games. Like I was saying while we were watching it, aside from about the first three quarters, aside from about a combined 4 minutes where the Warriors were on fire, they were, like, getting utterly dominated. But because of their 4 minutes that they were on fire, and then what happened in the fourth quarter, they ended up winning the game 105-100.
Yes, it was 105-100. So one thing I actually do want to talk about is the way that the Hawks were deciding to play defense on the Warriors is they... So Iguodala and Green combined shot 2 for 9 from the three-point line. And I think every one of those, except for maybe one or two of Green's, were wide open from the corner. And they were just saying, like, you know what, guys? Guys being Draymond Green, you know what, Draymond? You know what, Iggy? If you guys want to beat me, if you guys want to, like, win, you know, you guys have to hit your three-pointers. And sometimes you shoot 2 for 9. If that's because, so, I mean, we're talking about, like, 2 out of the 5 death lineup members, right, who are clearly the weaker shooters among that 5-man combo, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
and they were saying, like, go and, like, do it and stuff. And I still think that that's, like, an underappreciated way of responding to the whole death lineup thing. I think it worked really well.
I think, I mean, it worked really well, and it trickled down, right? It by taking away those options, making it more making it more difficult for the Warriors to find seams. I mean, like, you end up with Curry, Durant, and Thompson going combined 22 for 51, right? And if you're getting Curry, Durant, and Thompson going 22 for 51, you've got to kind of call that a pretty good, like, that's about as good as you're going to get as far as the defensive performance slowing those guys down.
Sure.
And that's when the Hawks got that. And that's not in no small part due to the fact that they were willing to sag off and send extra dudes at those guys and willing to let Iguodala or Draymond Green or Patrick Clark or Sean Livingston beat them. And those guys, you know, stepped up big enough, and they played some fantastic defense in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, they really did. And Draymond Green in particular, who is leading the league in defensive real plus minus, so at 3.9. So, yeah, Draymond Green, he's talked about, he said it to the media pretty much straight up, like, hey, you know, the way that I'm approaching this season in terms of my individual accolades and, like, what I want to achieve, And I can appreciate that he admits that there's an aspect of that, right?
Right. You know? I mean, it's crazy to deny that exists, you know? Well,
but, like, a lot of...
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, a lot, right, of players.
Yeah. So he's like, you know, my thing, I want to win the DPOY that I deserve, right? And tonight we saw why.
Yeah, in the last minute, there was a sequence where Schroeder went to the rim, Draymond blocked it, not only blocked it, but blocked it off Schroeder and out of bounds.
Right.
About 20 seconds later, Bazemore goes to the rim. Draymond blocks it. Not just blocks it, blocks it off Bazemore and out of bounds.
Yeah, and those are the sexiest blocks, in my opinion. Like, you know, I love Whiteside. You know I love Whiteside. But one thing he used to do that was really frustrating is just, like, you know, the pow, like, out into the stands. You're giving the ball back, right? I mean, like, the Draymond Green blocks were, like, his hand was, like, palming the ball all the way down as these players just were like, oh shit, or oh crap, like, I just hit a mountain man who's a mountain and I'm gonna fall now. And he just basically blocked it all the way down while they tumbled out of bounds.
Yeah, and I mean, you hear like the stories, right, and there's some degree of footage of this, but obviously not the best footage in the world, of Bill Russell sort of other team shoots and he blocks it and doesn't just block it, but, like, redirects it to Bob Cousy, who's already running a fast break.
Yeah.
Right. And that's, like, the perfect platonic ideal of a block. But what Draymond's doing is not far off from that as far as the ability to, like, retain possession for his team and turn it into, like, a block steal combo.
Yeah.
And that goes a lot. Yeah. Tim Duncan used to do that a lot. It goes a very, very long way. One thing, though, that stood out in this game that I think is we've talked about before and is going to be a problem for the Warriors going forward,
Zaza.
Not just Zaza, but sort of what Zaza embodies, which is their sort of lack of ability on the defensive boards against really good rebounding teams.
Yeah.
between Millsap and Howard, they had more rebounds than any four Warriors combined.
That's 14 and 16, by the way.
Yeah, they had 30, and the most you get by combining four Warriors is 29 between Durant, Zaza, Iggy, and Thompson.
Yep.
And that's not great. When your entire starting lineup has as many rebounds as two dudes in the other team, that's troubling. And it's troubling going forward because they're going to have to deal with Chris Paul, Blake Griffin, and DeAndre Jordan, Blake Griffin, rather, and they're going to have to deal with Justin Thompson, LeBron James, and Channing Frye, and those guys, Kevin Love. And those are good, good rebounding teams, and those are the teams that the Warriors have to beat if they want to get back to being championship title men. And, you know, that's a real, real weakness in this team. Towards the end of the game, the Warriors put in this utter buzzsaw death lineup of ultimate destruction, this Steph Curry, Draymond Green, Klay Thompson, Kevin Durant, Andre Iguodala. And offensively, they were extraordinary. And defensively, they were also extraordinary. They were, like, denying the paint and putting a lot of pressure on the perimeter. And it got to the point where the Hawks strategy was, like, take a jumper and let Millsap and Howard crash the boards.
Yeah.
And they were getting points on, like, almost every possession. Either they're getting points or Dwight was missing free throws on basically every possession that way.
Yeah.
And that's, like, a legit strategy against that lineup. And that's a problem that there's, like, a, if not a hard counter, at least, like, a pretty solid answer to that lineup that is just chuck the ball at the basket and have your tall boys grab it.
Yeah. It is worth mentioning, though, that Kevin Durant, between Kevin Durant and Draymond Green, they have someone who, like, almost no one, if they're jumping in straight up to grab a ball, almost no one can out-jump Kevin Durant, right? And almost no one can get through a box out from Draymond Green. So I think that they might be able to collaborate and make something work there. But then it's like Kevin Durant is going to get muscled by everyone else who's 7 foot tall also. And then Draymond Green is 6'5", so he's not going to be DeAndre Jordan, like, grabbing it from 15 feet in the air.
Right, and that's going to be a problem for them going forward. I mean, they were able to – I mean, they did a great job sort of minimizing it. I mean, honestly, not even that great job minimizing it. It kind of came down to Draymond Green making some, heroic defensive plays that they were able to hold in this game.
Mm-hmm.
But they – you know, they didn't have – they just didn't have the horses to sort of hang with them on the boards. The other big takeaway from this game, which is actually an inadvertent takeaway from this game, is that Steph Curry's sort of clutch numbers this year are markedly diminished from last year. And obviously, small sample size stuff applies, but, like, the statistical evidence is there, like, across the board.
Yeah, I just don't want to talk about this until there's more... until it's, like, easier to substantiate one way or the other. Like, yes, the numbers would appear that that's the case, but there's a lot of reasons for that.
And right, but I think that there's something to be said for this, even in small sample size, because last year, Curry sort of established this mystique of this, like, magical game-ending little elf who just, like, oh, you're up 4, now we're up 10, ha, 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 hit 2 30-footers, game over.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it.
And that's not the case this year. Like, he's not hitting the shots the same way.
He's not taking the shots. Like,
that's not true. Like, he missed back-to-back 27-footers that would have sealed the game tonight. Well,
yeah, but the ball got to him with, like, 4 or 5 seconds left, and he, like, made something work. Like, the initial play was run through, like, Draymond and KD. Like, what you're saying makes some sense, right? Especially coming off of, I'm not sure if you guys knew this, but the Warriors blew a 3-1 lead last year in the finals. You might be right, you know, and I'm not even saying that you're wrong. Like, I'm not even, like, arguing about it. I just, like, I want to see it bear itself out, because it seems like one of those things that it's too easy to cherry pick and be like, you know, I don't want to be like Colin Cowherd, you know? Like,
I'm not saying, like, Steph Curry's not clutch or he's, like, a choker or anything, but I'm saying that there's clearly...
I don't think it's clues.
Like, a difference in, like, the mystique and perception there between this year and last year.
Yeah, but there's also another super a super massive black hole on the court too. I mean, Kevin Durant is also very threatening in the clutch.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, no doubt about it. But like, it's rate numbers I'm talking about. I mean, you're right that like that does change the calculus. But like, this was the thing, is that last year Steph Curry was magical, and this year we're seeing sort of, I mean, obviously not holes in the game. Like, he's still putting up tremendous numbers and playing incredibly well. But we're seeing that, like, I mean, we were talking about this just earlier. Like, last season, right, when Steph had the ball and they were, like, up five.
Do you remember that shot against the Thunder?
Yeah, well, that's
even... That was amazing.
That's an even crazier example of this. But, like, when Steph had the ball and they're up five, and he's walking the ball to the court, you're just like, oh, game over. Right? Like, he's going to hit this three. It's going to be an eight-point game. There's a minute left. It's game over.
Mm-hmm.
I just feel like that's not there in the same way anymore. Like, even in the way the commentators, the Bill Papa and the other guy,
who,
the commentators for the Warriors,
yeah,
like, even the way that they they're great, but even the way that they were talking about Steph in this game was like them like straining to like continue believing when they're like running into some hard evidence, like maybe, like, and honestly, like, it's fine, right? Because the sort of Steph Curry equals death magic thing, like, was probably never sustainable. Like, people are gonna miss shots sometimes.
I don't believe that this is like a thing. I want it to bear itself out. Like, I'm open to the
idea. It's not a statistical question though, right? It's a question of perception. And that's clearly changed just from the way that the commentators are talking about it.
Well, maybe that's good.
Maybe
he's a shark.
I mean, yeah, maybe he's hustling everyone.
Right.
But, like, there clearly has been, like, sort of a change in, like...
Maybe the Warriors lost the finals on purpose so that they could get Kevin Durant and win the next finals by hiding Steph, and then he comes out and he's even better.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just...
years ahead.
Maybe
Draymond's the best three-point shooter on the team.
I mean, all these things are possibly true. I guess I'm not concerned about it, but I do think it's interesting to wonder... about, especially given sort of Steph's like brand messaging over since the finals.
Oh, did you hear about his shoes?
Oh yeah, his shoes are plus, like, he has this whole
finish,
like,
line, like, their stock like imploded because they bought too many or something.
Yeah, like that. And like, he has this whole like, I'm done or whatever, like, I'm gonna, like, it's, what is it, like, that's done is like his old slogan. Or his new slogan about how, like, things have already happened. He's moving on to new things. Like, he's positioned himself as this whole, like, I'm over. It doesn't matter to me. I'm not even mad. I think it's funny. Kind of character. And I think it's fascinating to see this sort of, like, whether it's just, like, a minor slump or whatever it is, or just, like, statistical noise or whatever it is. It is happening in conjunction with that narrative that he's putting forward. That doesn't jive with what he's doing on the court. Like, that's just two facts.
Okay, well, I mean, also, it's worth mentioning, right, that all of his percentages are the same from last year, and, you know, he's going to be probably, like, 24 points a game instead of, like, 27 or whatever it is. He's playing less minutes. Like, it's...
But I'm not talking about his full game percentages. I'm just talking about...
He has less clutch attempts because he has Kevin Durant.
But there. He has fewer... His clutch rates are down, like, 6%. He went from 48 to 41 overall field goal percentage, from 39 to 32 3-point percentage, from 56 to 50 effective field goal percentage.
Like, yeah, it's just like, you know, I mean, he's taking, you know, less than half as many clutch shots as he was last year. I mean, also, let's not forget that the Warriors are 16-2, by the way.
Right. I mean, like,
there's not a lot of clutch performances needed.
Right. I mean, thus far, but like, like we saw tonight, it's just like he wants to take those shots. He's missing those shots, and those possessions like put them in a position where like that game became losable when it shouldn't have been.
I don't know. I want this to bear itself out. Like we've already talked about this like more than
I think it's
talking about.
I think it's a thing worth paying attention to.
Yeah, no, definitely it is. I just like it's so speculative at this point, and I just, you know, he's taking less shots in the clutch. There are more teammates who are taking clutch shots than there was last year. Like, he was the guy.
But isn't there a reverse corollary to that? That means that he should be taking better shots, that he should be making more often?
Yeah, potentially, but we're a fourth of... Like, we're 18 games in.
Yes.
I mean, they got blown out by the Spurs, and there's been two, like, games that have gotten, like, into the clutch. Like, you know?
I think it's been more than that, but I don't know. That's worth checking out for sure. What I'm saying is that I think it's worth paying attention to, and I think it's a fascinating minor subplot, especially given the way that, like, he's talking about himself.
Who should I have on and talk about this?
Ethan. Yeah, if we can get Strauss, that would be cool.
Yeah. Okay. So
because I'm very curious. I'm curious to see what people who close to the situation think.
I'm gonna have him on the show and misrepresent all of your arguments and make you look bad.
Well, that sounds familiar. So other things about this game.
You remember when you thought that the Warriors shouldn't pursue Kevin Durant?
We can talk about what that argument was about later. For the 17th time getting back into this.
Is there anything else you want to touch on?
Yeah, I think there's a couple things.
Hit me.
Yeah, well, Schrader and Delaney, or Schroeder and Delaney, rather, were, I think, both pretty impressive. Schroeder in particular, I thought was very impressive with his ability to get into the lane. His jumper needs some work. but I thought he did a really great job of creating space for himself and using Dwight Howard as a screen. And making that offense go, like, there were stretches where the Hawks were going.
Dwight Howard's such a wide man.
Yes, he's very large.
Yeah.
Both up, down, and side. I think that there was a stretch, there were long stretches where the Hawks were going shot for shot with the Warriors. And in no small part due to Schroeder, like, just disturbing the equilibrium of the Golden State defense. And when Delaney was in there, he did some similar work.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I think we're seeing it's starting to come together, like what this Hawks team could turn into.
In their best form. I think they've lost a few games most recently. I think they were coming off like a 2 or 3 losing streak.
They lost like 5 or 6, something like that. Maybe 4 or 6.
Something like that. After starting out really hot. But like, you know, I was watching that situation, especially after either last night or the night before, the whole thing where the Hawks were in L.A., same road trip, so yeah, it was last night, and Dwight Howard, like, got in a fight with a fan and did, like, the whole, you know, oh yeah, let's say it to my face, brah, like,
hold me back.
Yeah, yeah. And I was like, okay, is there going to be players-only meetings now? Is Paul Millsap going to get traded because he's like, I don't want this buffoon in my locker room? Like, it was something that I was watching, you know, but I don't think that that's a reality yet.
No, I don't think so either. And I think we're seeing that, like...
Let's give it a couple of years, though.
Yeah,
every time Dwight goes anywhere.
Yeah, give Dwight time and he'll make people upset, I think, is a fair axiom. But, I mean, I think that we're seeing like what this team could be, which is like this sort of devastating pick and roll with Schroeder and Dwight and Millsap sort of hanging around on the outside with Korver and Cephalosha, and they can just do a lot of things and just find ways to generate offense, and their defense is fantastic.
Their defense is such a pleasing blend of, you know, like bone crunching and skilled.
Yeah, I mean, it's right, because they pack the paint, but then they get out so quick.
Like, Tabo, like, will grind your bones to, like, make his meat, but, you know, we were talking about different ways that scorers can be efficient in movement, not necessarily efficient in scoring, and then, you know, you took that and was like, you know who's like that except with defense? Tabo. It's like every movement he makes is deliberate and serves a purpose and is doing something.
He just has an utterly insane to me ability to analyze and execute the quickest, most effective path from where he is to where he needs to be every time.
Well, except for Tim Duncan.
Well, Tim Duncan is also good at that.
Yeah,
but I mean, it's just like it's crazy to me that Tabo can just do that every single. Like, there was a play where Durant ran Tabo through two screens. And it's like he didn't even notice the dudes were there. Like, and he was just in his face immediately. And then Durant hit a crazy turnaround. It didn't matter. But, like, just the fact that he had to hit a crazy turnaround out of two screens and was not just wide open for a jumper is a crazy testament to Cephalosha's ability.
Yeah.
To play defense and to cover it that way. I mean, I don't know. I don't think the Hawks... We talked about this before, like, how for real are the Hawks vis-a-vis the Cavaliers?
I went on Driving Dish podcast and said that if there's any team that can contend with the Cavs, it's the Hawks.
Yeah, and I'm inclined to agree. And I mean, I know they lost tonight and showed a couple of weaknesses in certain places, but
Shout out Driving Dish again.
Shout out Driving Dish.
I like those guys.
Great show. Great guys.
Great show. Great guys.
Great show. Great guys.
Yeah.
A classic GSGG situation. but I think that we're seeing that, like, the Hawks, if the Hawks can play their best game against the Cavs 4 to 7 times, the Hawks could beat the Cavs 4 to 7 times.
Well, the Hawks have already beaten the Cavs.
Yes.
And they almost beat the Warriors.
Yeah, and that's, whew.
Yeah.
Let's see what they can do against the Clippers, and then it's like, wow, look at these guys.
Oh, yeah. Clippers are contenders. Okay.
Well, I mean,
They're actually contenders.
Yeah, they're very good.
I was just trying to be edgy.
I guess that's edgy.
Yeah, the Clippers are very good.
Let me see if I have any other notes on this game real quick. But yeah, I mean, I just thought that I was very impressed with Atlanta. Kent Bazemore continues
to... Have you watched much Atlanta?
Yeah, a fair amount.
Paul Millsap, man.
I mean, Millsap was fantastic.
He's like the crown jewel of... He's like the epitome of that defense that I described that is like a perfect blend of bone crunching and delicate in terms of execution. It's like every punch lands perfectly, but it also, it's like they're hitting pressure points, but with the force of 1,000 men.
It's kind of like Fist of the North Star. That anime? But the guy who, Kenshiro, and he can hit at different pressure points and they explode.
Oh, I was thinking you were talking about that guy who One Punch or whatever.
Oh, One Punch Man?
Yeah.
Also like that. But more like Fist of the North Star.
Yeah, whatever.
I mean, yeah, I guess I don't have much else to say about this. I just, like, the Hawks were so good. And the Warriors at stretches were so bad.
Yeah, but the whole time, I think that you knew that I wasn't taking it super seriously.
Yeah, I know you weren't, but there were just like things that were just like, like, there was a switch in the corner with Muscala and Schrader, and both Green and Curry just chased Schrader, and then Muscala was just wide open because they just left him alone.
Okay, so...
And it was just things like that, or, like, dumb bad passes that were turnovers, and things like that that are just, like... I understand that, like, regular season, like, doesn't matter about playoffs, like, they're going to lock it in, and, like, the fourth quarter they locked in, they were amazing. But just, like... We saw in the finals that this, like, semi-blasé attitude about things literally can cost them a championship.
Yeah.
I think that
I said that I concede that you're right on that point.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I was like, yeah, fair enough. Like, I guess, you know, my point is, all right, so first, tonight, all of the starters pretty much played 35, 36, 37, 38, 39 minutes, right?
Yeah.
And... Specifically, like, Zaza played like 18 minutes, right? They had the death lineup out there a significant portion of the time. They were trying to win this game, and they were failing to pull away with it. Now, that means like a couple of things, right? It means the Hawks are really good, and they are specifically built in such a way that it's difficult for the Warriors to deal with. But also, it means that, you know, it means that I will be watching them to see if they improve, because I think they're clearly better than they were day one in terms of chemistry, like in terms of defensive communication. You know, I think they're probably, they show those flashes of brilliance like more and more. It's like once every three possessions instead of once every five. And it's just their trajectory thus far has been so steadily climbing that it's like, you know, I don't want to pretend that they didn't care about winning tonight. I'm just trying to say that, yeah, they did, and they pulled it out, and that was cool. But, you know, I think that the 0-1 Warriors would not have pulled out tonight.
Yeah, I'm inclined to agree. I mean, I think part of it, and this like goes back to like the Steph Curry show I was talking about before, or Steph Curry stuff I was talking about before, and all that, is I think with the Warriors post 73 wins, post blowing the 3-1 lead.
Wait, the Warriors blew a 3-1 lead?
Yeah, little known fact. And post signing Kevin Durant, there's just like this sort of curiosity about what this team can be and like where things can go wrong for them.
Zaza.
Right, well,
Zaza was so bad tonight. Like, that's yeah. that's another thing. I was sort of joking when I said, you know, Zaza, when you were, like, talking about things to be concerned about, but also...
No, legit concern.
Yeah. I think that, you know, they're dipping their toes in the JaVale pond more and more, and I think that says something.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I mean, like I said, I think that it's worrisome that their best interior defense is really good perimeter defense and not letting the ball get into the interior, not playing defense in the paint. You know what I mean?
Like, that's a way of doing it. I mean, that's how the Thunder did it. It's fine.
It's like, a way of playing. It's a way of doing it, but like they don't have a backup plan to that, really. Or their backup plan is Zaza or Draymond playing out of his mind.
Yeah.
And the crazy thing about that is Draymond playing out of his mind is probably a more reliable backup plan than Zaza Pachulia playing regular.
Well, it is definitely. You know, it would be good. They're going to make a trade. I mean, we've talked about this.
A thousand times, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like, I think that when we went through and, like, looked at all the free agents, like, we were so thorough with that we've talked about the player that will end up on the Warriors. Because we talked about every possibility, right? And if you haven't heard that, go back and listen to it. The title is something to do with, you know, the Warriors need a new center. But, I mean, that... It feels like when the Cavs last 2 years ago, right? We're like, okay, this isn't working. Or it is working, we're winning, but we're flawed. So they went out and traded two first-round picks for Timothy Mozgov, right. It's going to be something like that, you know?
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think, well, that's why it's important to, like, I think, isolate these, like, flaws with the Warriors now. Because, like I said before, it's totally reasonable to me that by, like, February, they're winning games, like, 130 to 105 and everything's fine.
Yeah.
What
if Shaq comes out of retirement? That would be dope.
That would be so stupid. It would be amazing if Larry Sanders came out of retirement and played for the Warriors.
Yeah. But his career went up in smoke.
Certainly did. I guess, like, yeah, I just think it's interesting to think about the Warriors in terms of the gap between where they are and what they could be. Especially because we spent the entire offseason being like, oh, wow, they're going to be unstoppably good.
They're 16-12. They have the best record in the league.
They're 16-2.
Oh, right. Yeah. They're 16-2. They have the best record in the league. They're dispatching teams left and right. They scored 149 points the other day.
That was crazy.
The Warriors are really good.
Like, yeah, I mean, they're obviously very good. And it's just this, like,
question. Tonight, by the way, they shot 34% from three. I mean,
yeah.
And, you know, they would normally shoot 45. Yeah. So,
but I mean, testament to the Hawks defense, but yeah, also clearly an off night. They're missing some open jumpers for sure.
Yeah. No, definitely. So you gotta get this pop filter a little closer. Can you hear me? Like, am I getting through?
Yeah, I can hear you. You're like right there.
What is that? I've never listened to David Bowie. It's like ground
control. Ground control, Major Tom.
Yeah. Ground control.
Are we still talking about Space Oddity now? Like, what's happening?
Follow at Almighty Ballin on Twitter. Do it. I'm so fun to follow. You know who else is fun to follow? At ML Surfboard, my co-host of today, Lux.
I'm fun to follow like once every 2 weeks and I remember to tweet. But yeah, you can follow me anyway.
That fun to follow.
You should follow me anyway because sometimes I do tweet good stuff.
Yeah, no. And look at luxwrites.com even though there's not much activity on that. You know, just actually, you know, to the extent that social media is like a peer validation like avenue, right? You know, just trust that I'm a credible source to say that he's great. And now they don't have to follow you. And they can just follow me at Almighty Ballin.
Oh, they can also follow me at ML Surfboard. And yeah, we'll have some new videos up on Lux Writes pretty soon. And hopefully there will be some actual writing there soon too.
Yeah, absolutely. And hey, before you do either of those things, it's the holidays. Seriously, your mom could use a pair of glasses, or your daughter, or your dad, or your dad's daughter, which might be you, or your dad's son, which also might be you. Get yourself a pair of glasses. It's 55% off. That's so cheap.
That's so, like, I'm legit mind boggled by the fact that it's 55% off.
No, that's how much they you know.
No, I mean, I don't, it's not that I don't think it's true. I think it's just a huge percentage.
I talked for a really long time with Paz, is one of the people who started the company.
Shouts out to Paz.
Shout out Paz. I'm excited to be working with GlassesUSA.com.
Yeah, I'm
excited. Use that promo code Almighty, 50% off, vote 55.
55%.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm going to use that code. I'm going to buy sunglasses.
You should do it. Yeah, well. Support the podcast. And that's the thing is, podcasts are free. You have to listen to like some pre-recorded Blog Talk ads. I have to feed my family, which is my dog and me and my girlfriend sometimes.
Yes.
Thanks for listening. like the Facebook page too, almightyballer.com. I mean, we're done.
Yeah, we're going to go now. Goodbye. Thanks for listening. You guys are great.